said, because I'm the money guy in my daytime career, I'm a financial advisor and, you know, investments and insurance,
Tom Hansen,
all that kind of stuff for the last 20 years. I'm like, man, that's a tough topic to talk to men. In fact, my roommate, Dan, was trying to get out of me the topic. He's, you going to talk about tithing? I'm like, no, I'm not going to touch that topic at all. I certainly could. There's a lot. In fact, I've been told in the Bible there's more written on money than any other topic. More than any one topic, but I'm going to be a little bit more story oriented today. So I'll start with I'm from McFarland, Wisconsin. Anyone know where McFarland is? All right, it's a little suburb on the southeast corner of Madison. I'm a very proud Wisconsin Badger. I don't know topically wise, but I noticed there was a lot of focus on aging, and in 73 days I'll be halfway to 100. and that's what I'm calling it, by the way, halfway to 100. And it's interesting, and I don't know if it's because I'm getting older, but for a number of years now, every day I read the paper, but I always read the obituaries in the paper. Now my wife asks, she thinks I'm weird, and she'll say, like, why do you read the obituaries, and why do you read about dead people? And I said, I don't read about dead people. I actually looked to read about a great life well lived. So I thought the theme that Stuart was talking about last night, you know, making every day count. And in fact, yesterday I was doing an Operation Timothy with a good friend of mine, Brad Gilbert, and I said, hey, do you mind if we start our Operation Timothy? I just want to look for a couple inspirational obituaries. And I always look for a couple longer ones because they usually got more details of their life. And there were two guys specifically yesterday in Madison's paper that... There was Erling Gunder Landsverk. He passed away at age 89. There was Robert Bob Schmelzer. Bob Schmelzer passed away at 93. Here's some of the things they did. They both served our country in World War II. They had very interesting careers and businesses. Actually, I think it was Erling played classical guitar, learned classical guitar, and actually wrote music late in life. They traveled to very interesting places. They served on school boards, volunteer fire department. One of them, that was Bob, was fixed up Model Ts and you know, was a car collector. They both got married, had kids and grandkids. But not one of the obituaries I ever read talks about how much money they made or how much money they died with. So I kind of wanted to start my money topic with that in mind. And I've really never read it. I mean, they might talk about their businesses they had or interesting careers, but they never talk about how much money they ended up when they died. You know, yet so many of us spend so much of our life worrying about money and finance. In fact, that's my career is a big part of that, because money is certainly an important part of our everyday life. So, interesting enough, while it's my job to talk to you about money, the reason I got into this industry 20 years ago was because I really had no financial background or education. I mean, I don't know how many of you got a lot of education in high school or college or from your parents financially. I didn't get, I don't think really any. I learned how to save, put money in a bank account, but then you get married, you have kids, and isn't everyone teaching you how to succeed financially. So as a dad at age 29, 20 years ago, two kids, married, no retirement plan. The company I worked at didn't offer one. You know, I just said that when a friend of mine called me up and said, hey, Tom, would you like to sit down and talk about this? After I ended up becoming a financial client, I said, I think this is an industry I could get excited about. I think I could enjoy learning about money. So first, let me tell you a little bit about Thomas. My mom must have been prophetic when she named me Thomas, because I was a doubting Thomas. I actually went to church, Sunday school growing up. In fact, I remember in fourth grade, I actually got a Bible for never missing a Sunday school class. But by the time I got through my Lutheran catechism, you know, about 14 or so, I would have probably described myself as agnostic if I knew what that word meant. In fact, people would say, do you believe in God? You know, and I'd be like, you know, gosh, I'd love to say, and I was very honest about it. I was actually kind of jealous about those people who had faith, you know, and they would just say clearly, oh, yeah, I believe in God, and I'd be like, but who is God? And I'd have spiritual conversations and questions, and for a long time, really no one answered those questions. And so after I went to college at UW-Madison, and got into the radio advertising industry. I don't know if any of you are familiar with WIVA in Madison, but on the FM side, that's 101.5, that's the rock and roll station. On the AM side, that's the home of the Badgers, Brewers, Packers, all that stuff. And really had a pretty darn good career in radio, calling up business owners every day. And then when I was 29, as I said, a friend of mine called me up and said he was getting started with his financial company. When we met, got excited as a client, then got excited as a potential associate. I got started actually last month when I celebrated my 20th year full-time in the industry. Now, I wish I could tell you my first year or two that I made $1 million or $100,000. Anyone ever worked in the financial industry before? Do you usually get rich in your first year or two? No, I didn't. In fact, I would say even though I worked really, really hard and had a modest level of success, I'd say I would describe my first 2 years as my debt creation years. In fact, 2 years into the financial industry, I was watching my finances swirl a little bit down the toilet. I had $40,000 plus in credit card debt. Things looked pretty bleak. In fact, I thought my wife and I, we were going to look like we might lose our house because I had a balloon payment due on a home equity loan. Things were pretty tough. Even though I was counseling people how to succeed financially because I'd taken kind of that entrepreneurial career leap, things looked pretty bleak. But it's funny how God can use the circumstances like that to plant the seeds of faith in our life. So at that time, I had a lot of fear, I shouldn't say a lot of fear, it was a lot of doubt. What did I do, man? Should I just go back and get a job? And about that time, in 1998, a friend of my wife's husband, I met him at a Christmas party, and we got talking, and he had moved to Madison to help plant a church. And I remember asking, wow, you moved to actually help start a church? I couldn't imagine that as a non-believer. I'm like, wow, you would actually relocate to help start a church. And I said, I'd like to come visit your church sometime, because I always liked going to church. I always liked the morals, the values. Never had a problem with going to church. Just wasn't a believer. And so I remember going to church, and that church was a little bit different than the church I'd always grown to. People actually sang from their hearts. There were Bibles open. It was just different. And in fact, I remember on the way to that church, my wife said, just so you know, we're not switching churches. And I said, honey, who's talking about switching churches? We're just going to visit this guy's church. But at the end of that church service, he said, hey, would you like to get together and study the Bible? And I looked at him and like, yeah, I actually would. That sounds like fun. And so that was spring of 1998. We started meeting, I remember, at like 6 a.m. every Thursday morning. We started doing nights, but that interfered with my financial work schedule. So we started meeting early in the morning. About that time, I was also reading a book called Jesus CEO, because it just was a book someone had recommended. It told me about the human characteristics of Jesus, his compassion, his leadership, his just amazing. And somehow, the combination of that book, all of a sudden learning about this person, Jesus, who going to church all these years, you'd think I'd know about Jesus, right? And then reading what the Bible had to say, that spring is when I had a conversion experience. In fact, on Easter Sunday, 1998, I got baptized. My wife actually, I came home from one weekend because she was fighting me. She's like, why are you doing all this Bible study stuff? She was like, she thought I was turning into one of those wackos, you know? But I came home from a business trip. I'd been gone that weekend, and she goes, I want to get baptized. I'm like, what? And she had met with my friend Calvin Singh, who, by the way, is an Indian from Malaysia whose grandma was converted by a Methodist ministry from the United States who went there. Isn't it amazing how a Methodist ministry goes there, converts grandma, grandma saves son, son comes here, saves me. It led me to Christ. And long story short, my wife and I actually both got baptized on Easter Sunday. And I'd love to tell you that everything instantly got good, financially. I made $1 million and things. No, but I will say, it was the circumstances of really going through a lot of financial hardship that I think helped me be better at this business. Because one, I don't judge people. When it comes to people's finances, I've never like, wow, you got that much debt or anything. Or in fact, I would say this as men, if you've been financially successful or if you've ever gone through a hardship, but let's say I've heard men say in the presence of other men, at least I've never had to declare bankruptcy or something like that. And when I hear that, I say, you probably just said that in front of a man who has. because probably one out of three, one of four has. You don't realize how many people have gone through financial struggles because I've been meeting with them for 20 years. I see once you get behind the, you know, get to see the real finances, a lot of people have struggled financially. So I had the advantage as I got started as a new Christian of having the freedom of schedule. So I was actually discipled by a guy in CBMC who was also a pastor for 4 years and then a pastor at my church for 3 years. I got to meet every week and really get discipled and get in the Word. And really, when I became a new Christian, anyone ever think when you became a new Christian, you had to sell out and totally become a pastor? I thought I was going to have to quit. I kind of thought I was going to have to quit my job. I really was sure I was going to become a pastor because to me, if I go for something, I go for it. And I was kind of sad about that because I loved what I did in the financial world. And I was like, wow, I don't really want to quit. But I realized as I started getting involved in CBMC that you can be a pastor in the marketplace. I mean, you can be a pastor wherever you're at. We all can. I don't care if you're a janitor or mortgages or investments or whatever, you know, car dealership, you name it. You can be, we can all be a pastor in the marketplace. And so, someone's laughing at us. But isn't it real? I mean, the fact is, so, you know, through CBMC and then also kids ministry, I felt like I've had a chance to really grow. And it's amazing. Really, I'll just give credit to CBMC. When I first got invited about 6 months after a new Christian, I got invited out to a CBMC lunch. And a friend of mine, Tony Thorstedt, said, hey, what are you doing for lunch on Friday? And I said, nothing. Why? He said, why don't you come to a business lunch? And I came out not knowing it was a Christian business lunch. And in that meeting, I remember it was a janitor from Wanakee Middle School sharing his testimony. And I left that meeting like 10 feet off the ground. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing that businessmen will get together and openly share their faith. And I remember I came back to the meeting a month later thinking, well, it won't be as good. But, and by the second meeting, I was hooked. I've been actually involved in the committee now in Madison 18 years. And I'm the actually outreach chairman. Next month, Tom is our speaker, actually. Tom Meyer is going to be our speaker next month in Madison. We've been really blessed. But now I'm going to give you some practical advice. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about what I do in my day job. If anyone wants to write this down, I'm going to give you six practical steps that I learned about how you can kind of have a financial checkup. And you can kind of look at this and say, how am I doing in these areas? This is just really practical advice. The first step I look at is cash flow. Now, by the way, when I meet with a family, I say step one is cash flow. I usually say increase cash flow. There's two ways that we increase cash flow. One is make more, and the other is spend less, since cash flow equals income minus outflow. Now, when I do a seminar, I actually ask people, who would rather make more versus spend less? And everyone's hand shoots up. And I go, mine too. I hate budget. That must be a dirty word or something. But the reality is, no matter how much we make, we got to watch how we spend it. I mean, I'm frugal in a lot of ways and probably not as frugal in certain ways. Like, I always drive used cars. That's one of my deals. I'm just, because I put 30, 40,000 miles a year in my car, I'm not going to. But maybe I eat out too much. You know, we all have things that we do that we could watch how we spend money. Okay? Manage debt. Step two, manage and eliminate debt. Is there anyone in this room that wouldn't feel better if they were debt free? Yeah, I think we all would. And that's, you know, Dave Ramsey, that's his thing. He really focuses on steps one, two, and three. I'll get to three in a second, but getting debt-free. I think we'd all feel better if we're debt-free. Just do a better job of eliminating. By the way, the quickest way I know to get out of especially the high-interest debt, the credit card debt, is don't add to it. You know, but it really goes back to step one. We got to first make sure we're right. Are we making more than we're spending? Spending less than we're making. So manage and eliminate debt. Step three, create an emergency fund with at least three, maybe six, maybe 12 months of income. Have an emergency fund. My 24-year-old son actually works with me in the business. He actually calls it the oh crap fund. The oh crap fund is, oh crap, the water heater went out. Oh crap, the car broke down. Okay. The reality is we all have those moments. Emergencies are a reality. Unexpected expenses or temporary job interruptions. So the reality is, have an emergency fund would be step three. You know, if we can do those first three steps, we could have a little bit more financial peace. I think we could have a lot more financial peace. Wouldn't you agree? It just, if we made more than we spent, that means we have to be grown up and really look at what we make and what we spend, manage it, start getting out of debt, and then have an emergency fund. Steps 4, 5, and 6 are really what I call grown-up finances. That's mainly the world that I do most of my work in. But step 4 would be insurances, proper protection. Now, we all know we got to have insurance. You know, if we have a car, we should have auto insurance. If we have a home, we definitely have home insurance. But it's amazing to me in a lot of areas like life insurance, how many people don't have life insurance. I actually had a pastor in Madison join me in business, a pastor of a church, the House of Refuge. She joined the church because she said she was sick of young people in her church. She had seen too many people die that had children that didn't have life insurance. She said, I want to make sure families start getting life insurance. And for a lot of young people, it's like a $15 a month decision to have a $250,000 20-year term. I mean, it's dirt cheap. But just most people don't know they can do that and just affordably. And then step 5, my favorite step, was to learn how to grow money. That's a long-term asset accumulation is step 5. This is what most people, when they think of investing, they think of, oh, stocks, you know, a stock market. That's certainly an asset class, mutual fund, stocks, bonds, all that kind of stuff. But it's just teaching people how to have a plan, by the way, and get out of the way of their own emotions. The reason the average investor that manages their own finances underperforms the averages of someone who does have a financial advisor is their emotions get in the way. They panic when the market's down. They wait to get back in until investments are up. We are emotional creatures, whether we admit it or not. They say the average investor experiences way more pain when they lose money than joy when they gain money. So a lot of people make tough decisions. And I'm not saying I have every answer, but there are tools available to help people avoid making bad decisions when it comes to the long-term investing, things that can give them guarantees and things like that. And then step 6, by the way, last step, have an estate plan. Have some kind of will or trust plan. Have an estate attorney, and I know you can do it with documents on the internet now too and stuff, but have some kind of plan that says, hey, if I do a good job accruing this stuff during my lifetime, how can I pass it on to the next generation more advantageously or the church? And by the way, I would give the advice, have someone that you work with financially, professionally, that you trust that would give you good advice. The reason I say that, I think all of us know how to work on our car, right? Or probably could. But I don't work on my car. I'd rather have a professional that does it every day because they know what they're doing and they got the right tools. Mm-hmm. I think the same is true kind of in this area of your life. Yeah, you can do it. There's a lot you can do on the internet. But I think sometimes it makes sense to have someone that will actually help guide you. And so I got some spiritual advice. I actually asked all the CBMC guys as I was sitting at the table yesterday morning in my weekly CBMC meeting what kind of advice they would give spiritually. I'm going to give some advice that Eldon Davis gave me. By the way, the first thing I did write again is do not judge. I mean, some of you probably are very financially successful and maybe have never had a major financial, but I'm guessing some of you dealt with some pretty tough stuff, and sometimes it wasn't your fault. You know, it was a health issue, a job interruption. But let's read what it says in Matthew 6:24 through Matthew 6:34. Anyone know what those verses are about? Money, but specifically another thing, worry. These verses, I think, are going to talk about money, worry, and contentment. So let me read these out loud. It says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. I love this. You cannot serve both God and money. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And actually, I'll just stop there in that verse. That's some of my favorite verses. Do you ever know someone who says the words, so I'm afraid of this or I'm worried about this? I've got a really, really good friend that I've seen him age 20 years in the last 10, just because I think his language is, he says, I'm worried about this, I'm afraid of this. I'm like, dude, you got to stop worrying so much. God's going to take care of you. By the way, and I would also say, you know, you still got to work, right? A good friend of mine, a Christian friend, when I was a new Christian, he said, Tom, pray as if it's up to God, but still work as if it's up to you. at the end of the day, when it comes to having some success in life, we got to still get out there and work hard too. But I asked my pastor friend, Eldon Davis. Anyone know Eldon? Eldon Davis? He's a great man. He's a pastor I studied under for 4 years. He said, Tom, he said a verse I would share with everyone would be 1 Timothy chapter 6. And he said verses 6 through 9, but I'm going to read verses 6 through 12. All right. I read these, and I think it's just some fantastic advice. And this is where I'm going to wrap up, everyone. All right. It says, but godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. This is such an important verse here, you guys. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Did it say money was evil?
No.
No, it said the love of money. Certainly, that could be a god for a lot of people. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And this is the final charge he made to Timothy. But you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. Fight the good fight of the faith. Take hold of the eternal life to which you were called when you make your good confession in the presence of many witnesses. So on that note, that's my talk on Man Up Financially. Thank you guys so much for getting the chance to talk. Yes.
What was that reference? 1 Timothy what?
1 Timothy 6, and then verses 6 through 12. And then the ones on worry are Matthew 6. I think it's Matthew 6, 25 and 6, 33. I reference those a lot.
All right. Anybody have any questions they want to ask Tom or anything?
Okay. How many months on the emergency fund?
It says 3 to 6 is what I've always heard, but I'd say more is, you know, if you have 6 to 12... The reality is, if you added up what your monthly bills were, let's say by the time you added groceries, gas, and everything, let's say it's $2,500 a month.
Yeah.
You know, 3 months then would be about 15,000, or 6 months would be about 15,000.
Yeah.
So it's just, by the way, I think it's peace of mind. Here's what I've seen. I meet with and even interview people, and certainly I know what it's like to have hardly any money in the checking account. I remember when I was getting started in this business, and my wife asking me, are you getting a paycheck this week? Because I would get paid on Tuesdays and Fridays. And I said, I hope so. And she said, I hope so too, because we don't have any groceries in the fridge. I mean, that's, by the way, that was important. I think that's when God instilled faith in me. By the way, I will let you know. So when I was going through that period of my life and I thought, gosh, I might lose my house, I actually asked myself this question. I said, what happens if we lose our house? Well, me and my wife at that time, two boys, now I have, you know, 4 kids and 2 grandkids, but I said, will we be homeless? And I thought, no, there's no way I'd be homeless, because my mom or my dad or my brothers or my friends would never let us be homeless unless I chose to be homeless. And I thought, what if we didn't even have money for food? You know, what if we were that, what if we hit just a bad stretch of a month or two? Would we starve? And I realized, no, only if I was too prideful to take food, accept food or help. So I really realized when I was going through that period where I actually went backwards financially, where I'd left as a top paid account executive at the top radio station, probably had the ego to go with it too, to go to also where I was very financially humbled. I realized what I feared the most was being financially embarrassed in front of people around me. It was a pride issue. It was actually more about me, and what I was afraid of was how it would look to other people. So hope you don't mind me adding that bonus. Yep.
I've got a big, big picture. I don't even know the question. I want to bring it up because it's been bothering me. When I retired from teaching in Milwaukee Public Schools, my salary was around $50,000, probably a little bit more, kind of average year. If I multiply that by 2,000, that's how many years I would have to work to equal the salary of one of our Milwaukee Bucks players.
Yeah.
I'm not faulting that Bucks player.
Hey, Hey, you know, the interesting thing about it, in the world we live in, stop watching Bucks games. Don't go to a Brewers game. Don't watch the Packers tomorrow. Yeah, what? I mean, let's face it. We're the consumers driving that. Let's face it.
I got a question.
Yep, let's start here and then we'll go to Brian.
You know, when you hear people talk, I was in the financial services world too. I worked for New York Life, and I sold all the products.
Yeah, yeah.
All the mutual funds, all that other stuff, annuities, and all that other stuff. You know, the truth of the matter is, life doesn't go perfect.
It doesn't.
You hear people saying, "Well, you should save this up, and at the end of the day, you should have this magic number and all that." That rarely happens.
As a financial planner, I 100% agree with you.
Now, what I'm thinking in 2008. Or thereabouts, the economy crashed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so you got a lot of baby boomers that were affected by that crash. So they can't fit into this nice, I heard Stuart Bristol talking, I heard all of them talking about this nice little thing about where you have time and all that. What are you seeing in people who don't have the luxury of being in this neat little formula that everybody considers? And I'm not overly worried anyway. I think the scriptures come into play. God takes care. You know, people always worry about... And if I don't have my health and all that, all this financial wealth I stored up won't mean a thing anyway.
Right.
But what are you seeing people do that are caught, and there's a lot of people that get caught, and especially at the age group in this room, in that debacle that took place.
Let me speak to this. This is real practical, because I literally am at the kitchen tables on a daily basis.
Yeah.
First thing I'll let you know, the company I represent, we call ourselves the No Family Left Behind. So I really work with those who often aren't worked with by the higher net worth. A lot of the industry says unless you get $250,000 or more in investable assets, we don't want to sit down tight. So I help more $25 and $50 a month Roth IRAs get started than I do, you know, $100,000 rollovers, all that stuff. The reality is most people still find a way to retire, even if it's just living on Social Security and a little bit of pension they had from their job. I've recently helped a number of people. They're not living high on the hog, but they're actually getting into retirement, you know, okay. As long as they're not deep in debt and up to their eyeballs in debt, I'm finding even the people who really didn't do all the, you know, don't have the $1 million. By the way, almost no one I meet with has the $1 million nest egg. I mean, some do, but it's actually more rare. It's more common that they maybe have a couple, 300,000 if they're fortunate in their 401k, but that's about it. Yeah. By the way, going back to that, watching their 401ks turn into 201ks back in 2008.
Yeah.
And by the way, the market from October of 2007 to March of 2009 was down 56%. That's the average the S&P lost over that year and a half period. The people who got hurt, really, were the ones who pulled out around February, March. And I actually had a few clients do that because emotion kicked in, and that's what. And I'm by the way, I'm emotional too. We're emotional. Shoot, I lost you. I can't afford. And then they missed the corresponding upswing. So now they do have financial products and things. I'm just going to tell you that actually have locking guarantees and say, hey, you don't have to. It's your income isn't going down even during that. So I'm just going to tell you there are tools that are different than there were 10 and 20 years ago, out there now that actually. Give some answer to those kind of, so we can at least hang in there. Because none of us like to lose money. None of us. I don't gamble. If I go to a national convention in Las Vegas, I don't put a dime in the slot. I hate wasting a dime.
I think we were all kind of shocked that when Prince died that he didn't have a will, but haven't you found that most people don't? Because they never get around to it.
Can I tell you, there's a question I ask. I have this form. If I folded it all out, it's about 6 pages, but it actually takes me about 20 minutes to gather the info. The first page, though, it says dreams and goals. And right below the dreams and goals section, it says, when was the last time you and your family reviewed your financial goals? What do you think most people say?
They can't even remember.
Never. 9 out of 10 people. And not just the millennials. I'm talking the 40, 50, and 60-year-olds. Most people have never had someone sit down that looks at the big picture and has. So that's, by the way, what drew me into this business, because I was always, of my three brothers, I was the saver. I was the one who, but here I was 29, no retirement plan, you know, kind of lousy life insurance, no plan for success. And I said, hey, if I'm not doing this, and I thought of my truck driver brother, Russ, and my lawn care business brother, owner, Dan. And so most people do need some guidance and financial advice. And that's why I said that's good advice to have someone you trust that can help you have a plan.
But don't you expect when you sit down, they probably don't have a will? Haven't you found that over
yes,
here?
Yes, yes. They don't have a will.
They don't have a will.
And by the way, there are some, man, we've had some attorneys both in our Brookfield office and my Madison office. They'll sit down. It's not expensive. It's not like, it's like $400 maybe to have a whole package that has all that stuff in it. You know, it doesn't have to be very expensive to get that living will and financial power of attorney and all that. They can do it pretty cheap.
But 99 out of 100 will say, do you want to give more to the government or less?
Yeah.
99 out of 100 say less, but they don't have a will.
Yeah, right on. No. I saw a hand go up somewhere back there. Yes, no? All right. Yep.
Seven things. What was number six? Grow in money stock.
Let me, I'll rattle them off just so everyone hears them one more time. Step one, increase cash flow. Step two, manage and eliminate debt. Step three, create an emergency fund, 3 to 6 months income. Step four, ensure proper protection. That just means get the right kinds of insurances. Step five, build long-term savings. And step six, have an estate plan.
Wait a minute, what's that again? Step six?
Step six, have an estate plan?
That's the will bit.
That's the will or a trust, yeah.
What's number seven?
Seven, there isn't seven.
Oh!
Then you're not finished.
Actually, I did write it on there. It's have a financial professional, but I don't want to solicit my services. So. Is that good?
That's great. Well, I see our tanks are full, so it's time to go eat some more. It's about that time. Let's see. Who has a program handy?
I do.
Well,
Saturday evening right there.
Okay. What time do we have now?
So, it is 5 after 5. We finished 25 minutes early.
So we got a little cushion in here. We used to take, like, practically the whole afternoon off, so we're hardcore. All right, so we can probably start eating anytime we want up there. If anybody is not going to be staying the rest of the weekend and they have a meal ticket or they're going to grab dinner and then head out, stop back down and drop off your meal ticket with us so we can put that to use for other people that are coming, because a lot more guys coming in the morning, that type of thing. Okay, so just drop that off right at the back table back there in the lobby with Rita and them. And then we're back here at 7 p.m. And we'll have an action-packed evening in this room, and then we'll bring something warm with you down from your room so we can go stand outside and stand around some bonfire, maybe a sweatshirt with a hood on it or a hat. It's going to probably be a little damp.
This just happened.
Well, what happened?
Like 15 minutes ago.
What?
I've been wanting to catch a fish ever since I got here, you know, because it's hard to sleep. And so this are walking out here, they're Mexicans, yeah. And I said, wow, maybe I can help one of them. Now, honest to God, I'm not going to lie to you, this just happened. Anybody wants to look me straight in the eye? So I told the guy, and I saw this pier, and the Lord spoke to me and said, there's fish on it.
Did you tell him to cast your net on the other side of the boat?
So then I went over to the guy and said, since you got your stuff rigged wrong. And so I rigged it all up for him just the way I knew it worked. And I walked over and I casted his pole underneath it. And sure enough, there he was. I caught the fish, gave it to him, and says, here, now go ahead and
cast it. All right.
First cast. Honest to God.
Good for you all. Man, that takes.
I got my fish.
Where are we going?
You know what they say about fishing? A fisherman, isn't it, he's a jerk at one end of the line waiting for a jerk at the other end? Oh, is that hilarious? I do have tried to fish. Okay, anybody have anything else good has happened? We'll have testimony time later. Okay, is Ben still here? Ben, you're still here? You have a song you want to share with us. You want to do that now, or you want to do that when we get back from dinner? We could start off a little bit at 7 p.m. Are you going to still be here?
Yes, he will be here.
Okay.
You got music for 7 o'clock?
Yeah.
Well, you think
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Do you want to sing now? Is it a song from Rwanda? I don't know, we could use a little breather. It's totally up to you guys. You tell me.
I think breather.
Breather? Yeah, because we got it from, we'll be back here at 7. It's only a little while. All right, let's get back at 7, and then we'll have our songs, and we're going to have Pastor Malone
bringing us some more spiritual nourishment. We got a bonfire with Oscar and Julius. I mean Oscar and Howard, so.
That's why I said I don't want to.
All right. Thank you, Jim. I can't afford to, because I've been in a while. And he said,